women workers stripped to the waist with sugar on her back and began loading this sugar boat up. So in the meantime, the Japanese decided they wanted to give us all a physical. So they stripped us all off out on the deck with all these women loading the boat with sugar and laughing at us and teasing us, and I guess they got quite a show out of that. But when we got the boat loaded, our hold was the bottom, right on top of the screw. And up above us, there was 30 feet of sack sugar. So we pull out into the China Sea, smooth going, and the skipper of the boat says, "Beans, you're all so good, we'll let you all take a bath today." So they take us up on deck and they turn the hose on us, which was great. So back down in the stinky hole we go. And nighttime come rolling on, and the water began to get rough, and they battened down the hatches, and it was dark, and we run into a typhoon. And it got worse and worse and worse. And the front end had come out of the water, and the tail end had come out of the water, and that propeller shaft had just dance a jig. And we finally rode the storm out, but it was a terrific. And in the meantime, all the sugar began to settle and settle down and down, shaking it. And these sacks of sugar shake down. And our opening date kept getting smaller and smaller. But
were you in the dark all this
time?
Oh,
yeah, down underneath all this sugar. So the storm passed over, which we was all thankful for, and we got going along, and all at once, quang, bang, and we heard gunfire. So here comes the Jap sailors, they nail a hatch on and shut us up in there, and they start zigzagging through the ocean. You could feel it as it went. And it so happened that a submarine had attacked the convoy. But we were down underneath. We couldn't see what was going on, but we had to, we knew, because if it hit us, we were fish bait. But
Was everybody sick down there?
Oh, sick, and they'd lower a bucket down on a rope, and you'd use the bucket, and they'd go out again, and then they'd lower your drinking water down in the same bucket, I think. I'm not sure.
And that's all the facilities you had.
Oh, yeah.
And how many were you?
There was 200. In there? 200.
In an area about how big in feet, square feet?
Oh. Well, it was 50 foot square, I imagine. It was a big boat.
But the area you were in was about 50 feet.
Yeah.
50 feet square.
And there was three decks above us. And we was on the bottom deck. So it was a pretty good sized boat.
And all those decks were full of bags of sugar.
Yeah.
And did you, were the officers with you? Or?
Oh, yeah.
Officers?
Everybody.
And all packed in there?
Yeah, packed in there. And, tell you something funny. I go back to Manila again. But out of this 200 guys, we hadn't had mail since we'd been there. Hadn't got email or nothing, word from home or nothing. And so they said, "Ben, we're going to Japan at they'd get our mail for us. And it was Christmas time, I guess, or close. And there was Christmas packages. Well, out of that 200 guys, I was the only one they couldn't find mine. There I was, everybody with cakes and stuff in their boxes, and me, no packages. Kind of dispirited you for a while, but the folks sent it, I know that, so. But that didn't help me out any. But anyway, as I said, the submarine torpedoed one of the sugar boats, but they didn't get us. And we got to Japan, and we landed in a little town, little Moji. Moji's the name of it. It's a port town on the island of Kyushu.
Uh-huh.
And they split us all up. There was a doctor and two guys went where I did. There was the three of us. We went to number 8 prison camp. It was a coal mine camp. There was 200 Englishmen, 185 Australian, and 100 or so Dutchmen. And us three Americans. Now, it wasn't a very agreeable affair.
I see.
You know, you've been around the English enough to know how they are. Well, the Dutch are worse than they are, and they would have their God Save the King Day and God Save the Queen, and the Dutchmen would have the Queen's birthday. They'd celebrate it. And the Englishmen would have their whatever they have, and the Englishmen all came from Hong Kong, and when they came, they come full. Everything they owned, they brought. Tier 4 uniforms and complete kits.
Mm-hmm.
And they had more clothes and stuff than they knew what to do with. And me, all I had was that Navy uniform. And when we got to this prison camp, there was an English major who was a doctor, but he was the type of guy that thought he's a little bit better than anybody else, and when the Japanese wouldn't give him the special treatment, well, he just sold up and wouldn't do nothing. He wouldn't even be a doctor to his own troops. So when we got there, well, here are these 200 Englishmen, Australian, and Dutch. They were all there with just a couple of English orderlies taking care of them. Well, the major, our American doctor, he pitched in. He done a lot of good for them. But they designated me to go down the mine in case of accident and stuff like that. And whenever there was a cave-in in the mine, I'd go down and patch heads and stuff.
What were the conditions in the mine?
They had very, very good mines.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were what is it, one of these slanting tunnels that goes down? Big as this room, big circular thing with a two tracks going down it on a endless cable.
Mm-hmm.
And there was always a load of car coming out and an empty one going down.
What was the average work day there for the prisoners?
For the prisoners.
Yeah.
Well, you worked until you got your quota. On a day when they just got through blasting and there wasn't much slag and stuff, well, you could get it in 2 or 3 hours. But you get a day when it's been picked over already, it may take you 16 hours to get it.
The Japanese laid out a quota.
Oh, yeah. You loaded so many cars of coal. And if you can do it in 1 hour, you got to come out. If it took you 24 hours, you stayed there till you got it done.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very hot down there. Very humid. It's a poor grade of coal. It's a very soft coal. In fact, I doubt if you could burn it if you wanted to. They take and grind it up and make briquettes out of it, what they did.
I see.
But the Japanese hospital, which is right below our camp, anything we needed from the hospital, we could get there. And I used to get to go to the hospital for it. And I would take old shirts and stuff from the Englishmen and take them down and trade them to the nurses and stuff down there for eggs and stuff like that. And because then I'd give them one and I'd keep one, and we had all kinds of goodies that came back that way. But
what was the normal diet that they issued you?
Diet? Well, rice. Rice is the main diet. And there in Japan, we did get fish once in a while, dry salt fish. And greens, lots of greens, and some sweet potatoes, a lot of eggplant.
Mm-hmm.
And of course there was no seasoning or anything to go in it, no salt or anything to see. Just old boiled eggplant with nothing on it. Don't taste very good. But rice, I got to where I could eat a washed tub of rice and like it.
What was their relationship with the guards there?
Well, they were very strict. The guards were very, very strict. They every month they would change guards. So you wouldn't get too buddy-buddy with them.
Mm-hmm.
And they kept, say the guards would be at our camp one night, they'd go to some other camp for the next month.
I see.
And they was never around us long enough to get acquainted. And they had their pet duties, like roll call at every ungodly hours of the day and night and things like that.
I see.
Like they had 3 shifts working in the mines.
Mm-hmm.
And they would have roll call every time a shift would change, and you had to fall out, go down on the parade ground, snow up your ankles and just to be counted.
I see.
And things like that, which was kind of frustrating, I would say. Break you, wake you up twice a night to get counted. And they had little things on each of your rooms, little blocks of wood. And they said in or out or down the mine or restroom or whatever it is. And then every time you leave your room, you'd have to hang this little block on a nail to tell them where you was at. And if you didn't do it, they got aggravated.
When they got aggravated, what would they do?
Oh, slap you around a little.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one thing you learn down in the mine. When somebody tells you to do something, whether you understand what it is or not, you go ahead and do it anyway. Because the next time, you'll know what he's saying.
Uh-huh. In other words, they would beat you.
Oh, yeah. Well, not beat you, just hit you.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't call it beating, but like the tools that you use.
Yes.
They have their Japanese names for them, and they tell you to get an Ebo and Kikita. Well, if you didn't know what that was, next time he told you, you'd know what it was. Because he'd probably hit you over the head with it.
I see.
And, but the majority of the coal mine people were very liberal. I mean, you go down there and on a good day, well, you could. In fact, they worked their own civilian people right there beside us, and they had to do the same thing we did. Only thing, they had more food, and they used to bring us down stuff. When we eat lunch, they'd eat lunch with us and share their goodies with us sometimes.
Did you lose weight on that diet they had?
Oh,
there?
Yeah.
In other words, it was a constant losing proposition.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I weighed less than 125 pounds when I got out.
And you're how tall?
6'2".
6'2", yeah.
Because I'd already spent 3 or 4 weeks before I got weighed.
Mm-hmm.
So then we went back to the Philippines when the Army took us out, and hell, we ate and for a couple of weeks, so I'd really probably put on the gain.
And still you were at that weight.
Yeah.
Were there a lot of people ill? The miners? I mean, the prisoner miners?
Or? Well, they had lots of pneumonia.
Mm-hmm.
Because these buildings we lived in, there was no doors or nothing. I mean, it was just them paper slats and stuff. No heat in the rooms.
No heat.
No heat. Only place that had any heat was the kitchen and the shower room. And they had one of them great big bathtubs, big as this kitchen, with rail, those seats all the way around it. And I've seen lots of guys that go down there and spend the night in that hot tub because it was so cold up in their room. But
it's the only way to stay warm.
Well, I never did, but lots of guys did.
Was there a very high death rate?
No.
No, they just
not,
got
not
sick.
Not by then.
Uh-huh.
By then, most of the death-causing things had been eradicated, I guess you'd say it.
In other words, the survival of the fittest.
Well, that's right. Survival of the fittest.
And
by then, they got a little more medicine to give us. And in the coal, where you're working down the coal mine, the only thing you had to worry about was having a roof fall on you or getting pneumonia or something.
Mm-hmm.
Because you work down there hot and hot and hot, and when you come out in that cold outside air, really just lots of people got pneumonia, and thought a lot of them died from it, but.
So that there was just a kind of a steady death rate, but it wasn't mass catastrophe.
All the time I was in Japan in this camp, there was only four deaths.
I see.
But there were lots of sickness. I mean, but we had stuff to fight it with. And when they dropped the A-bomb over there, we was on one side of the island and the A-bomb was dropped on the other side, and there was a big mountain in here. And when it happened, we could see the mushroom, but we didn't know what it was.
I see.
It looked like a big gasoline tank or something had blown up.
Did you get any blast or anything from it?
No.
Any flash?
No.
Didn't notice any flash.
Well, I saw the flash, yeah, but not realizing what it was, we wouldn't know what it was if we saw it.
Mm-hmm.
But that very minute, then things got nasty. The Jap guards, every day they'd change them instead of waiting a month to change them.
Mm-hmm.
And they went armed. And so when we finally got around to...
Were they any more brutal than they
had been?
Oh,
no more brutal. We didn't give them a chance to be. We stayed clear from them.
Oh, I see.
As clear as possible. And...
Well, what were it when the Japanese armed themselves? What were your thoughts that they had in mind?
They said if the island is ever invaded, that every prisoner will be killed.
I see.
They'd already told us that.
And they did tell you that.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. How many times can you recall? A number. A
number of times. Yeah. And that's what I thought, that we'd made a landing on the island somewhere.
Mm-hmm. So you expected them to be shot at any time?
Well, yeah. Right. But when they finally told us that the war was over, there was a lot of carrying on, I guess. The Japs all bawled, and the camp commandant was going to commit Harry Carey, I guess, but I don't think he did.
But they didn't threaten you then.
Oh, no.
When peace came, what did they do?
Just turn us loose.
They just said, go.
All right. Mm-hmm. And a bunch of the guys went out, and they got somebody sold them a bunch of poison sake. And they came back into camp, and about 8 o'clock at night, and the guy come and got me and told me that Curly was sick. That was one of the friends I had over there, an English kid. So I went down to see him, and I just thought he was drunk. I never thought anything about poison or anything. So I put him to bed, and about 2 o'clock that night, he'd come back to get me again. He'd jumped up and went into convulsions and fell out of the second story window. And so I went and got him, but he was dead.
Do you think, what was it, just rotten sake?
Oh,
or
no,
it was purposely poisoned.
Purpose. And there was eight of these guys that had been on that drinking party, and they all died. They all died. But the major said the only thing that we haven't got that it might save them is have some carbon dioxide to make them start breathing again. See, whatever this poison was, it fouled her lungs up or something. So they called out to the American forces that we needed a doctor and some of this stuff. So they flew him in, but it was too late then. They were all dead. But when he got ready to leave, he said, "Well, I've got room for two other passengers."
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the American doctor, he was one of them. So me and Bob, we drew straws to see who was going to go. Well, he won.
Uh-huh.
Oh, you could have drew the earth out from under me. I was going to leave me there with all them damn limeys and Dutchmen. I'd go crazy. So I walked out to the car with him, and the pilot says, "Every day, about 4 o'clock, there's a plane lands down at this little airport at the southern tip of this island. So if you get down there, we'll get you out." Well, Major and Bob hadn't left before I did. So I went down, got on a train, and went as far as the railroad tracks went. You know, that's another thing that I'll give our Air Force credit for. They moved into a place, they blow everything away from the railroad track and leave that railroad track, not a scratch on it. Why, that used to just flabbergasted me. Lay the whole town to waste, and the railroad track's still there going through the middle of it. And so we went as far south as we could go, and I ran into some other guys that was going to the same place. So we commandeered a Jap truck and had the Jap driver take us on down to this airfield. And they took us to Okinawa from there.
Mm-hmm.
And we landed in Okinawa, and they gave us some donuts and coffee and had a plane ready to go, and so we took off, and we got out about 30 minutes from shore, and damn motor car fire. So one of the guys comes back and he says, "Get your Mae West and your parachutes on. I don't know if we can make it back or not." So got into our Mae West and our parachutes, and of course we didn't need them. He landed all right. And he said, "Well, do you want to chance it again, or you want to wait till tomorrow?" I said, "Hell, let's get out of here. We've come this far, let's go the rest of the way." So they got another plane, and away we went.
Getting back to your captivity there in Japan, you talked about trading items for food.
Yeah.
Could you relate some of the experiences you had there with the guards and so forth regarding
that? Well, the guards, they were very picky about that. I mean, every time you'd come back into the camp, you'd have to bow and scrape and all the stuff you have to go through. And I was always sneaking stuff in. Sometimes I'd sneak a newspaper in, sometimes I'd sneak fruit, oranges, get some oranges, eggs. There are many places you can hide eggs and stuff around on your body that don't show. And the Jap doctor, he always kept me supplied with stuff. I mean, sometimes I'd get as high as half a dozen eggs a trip.
Mm-hmm. What did it cost you to get it?
Well, wool underwear, something like that, that the Limeys had. And
how did you get it past the guards?
Oh, I'd wear it out. I'd wear it out with me. And then
I'd
get down there, well, I'd take it off and trade it to the doctor, and he'd give me eggs or whatever he's going to give me that day. And
how would you get it back through the guard, the food?
Well, that's a good question. Any way you can. You know, you'd be surprised how an egg will fit right up here underneath your armpit and not get broke as you go along.
I see. And did you ever get caught?
Oh, yeah.
What happened then?
I got slapped.
Slapped around.
But,
they never restricted you from going back.
Oh, yes, they did, too.
Oh, yeah, that's what I was getting at.
Yeah, they said, you're a bad influence. You're not going to get to go back down there anymore. You just have to go back to the coal mines and leave the hospital alone.
And did they do that to you?
Oh, yeah.
And how long would you stay in the mines?
Oh, I just go down every morning shift and with the crew, and I'd sit around down there and see if nobody got hurt or anything. Yeah. And if they did, well, I'd have to take them out.
Well, did you ever get a chance to go back to trade at the hospital again?
Yeah, I never did get to trade, but I got to go back to the hospital one time.
Oh, I see.
And that was when one of the guys broke his leg, and we took him to the Jap hospital, and the Jap doctor said, there's nothing wrong with him, he hasn't got a broken leg.
Oh, uh-huh.
And I said, I know he's got a broken leg. He hadn't either. So I said, well, okay, we'll just take him back to camp, and I'll let the American doctor set his leg. So when we came back, well, little Jap guard, we got to poking this guy on the leg with his cane, and I kept telling him, no, don't do that, and he did it anyway, and I clobbered him.
Yeah, then what happened?
Then they clobbered me.
How badly?
Well, bad enough I couldn't walk for a week.
What did they hit you with?
They all carried a club like a size of a broom handle.
I see. Uh-huh.
And that was their pet thing. They'd just whop you with that till they got tired.
I see. Did the Japanese doctor speak English, or?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Well, a little.
Right.
He spoke as much English as I did Japanese, which wasn't very much. But,
yeah.
But we could get our reasoning across.
What was their favorite punishment, did they?
Oh. Itty-nitty things. Like, waking you up in the middle of the night and make you trot around the compound barefooted in the snow.
Uh-huh.
And due to the fact that it's supposed to be good for beriberi and
that's good for beriberi?
No, I don't think it is, but they claim it was.
I see.
Circulation of the joints and elbows and the you had three roll calls a day, and then they'd wake you up in the middle of one of them at night to go out and do calisthenics out in the snow.
Mm-hmm.
Just because they wanted to have something to do, and we were handy for them to do it with, mostly. And now the camp commandant, he wasn't in on that. He was a pretty good old joker.
Was he in the Japanese army?
Oh, yeah, he was a Japanese army man. And he'd been to Manchuria and, mean man, he was a mean. But he was all strictly soldier.
Mm-hmm. But he allowed, though, the guards to do this.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But he didn't instigate.
No, he didn't. No, he,
I see.
He was too aloof. He was a, well, perfect gentleman as far as the as a officer goes.
Did he have any contact with you at all, or did
you just... Oh, no.
No, he just...
He was just there.
And you saw him from afar.
And from afar.
Yeah.
The major used to go in and talk to him once in a while. The doctor did.
I see.
And they used to play chess together.
Uh-huh.
And he couldn't talk English, and the major couldn't talk Japanese, but they could talk chess. They'd have some knockdown and drag out chess games.
I see.
But the rest of the people, any dealings you wanted with him, you went through his staff. He was I think he was a colonel.
Mm-hmm.
In the Japanese army.
But most of the punishment and things of that nature were done by the individual soldier.
Oh, yeah.
And kind of at his attitude.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
There was never an organized system.
No, organized. Mm-hmm. Other than, like I said, wake you up to have roll call every time they felt like it. But the food was better in Japan. There was more of it. There was more recreation time. And I learned to hate the Jap kids like death.
Why was that?
Oh, they would, little monsters would come up and say you was a coward because you surrendered and stuff like that.
Did they speak English?
Oh, no, but enough to let you understand what they were saying. Were saying, throw rocks at you.
Uh-huh.
You'd be walking down the street and half a dozen of them will start rocking you for the fun of it and laughing at you and things like that, which probably our kids would do the same thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
But the little boys were worse. Little girls, they were kind of more shy and.
Mm-hmm.
But every day when I'd go past their school, they'd go out and. For calisthenics and stuff. No sports, nothing like that. All the military, drills.
Mm-hmm.
And the boys and the girls both, they'd done their military drills, their hiking and their about faces and what have you, and
and when they saw you, then they would.
Oh yeah.
They would really get on you.
Mm-hmm. But there was no stores or anything in Japan like they had in the Philippines. Philippines had stores and stuff in Manila, but. In Japan, they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how they went about buying their groceries and stuff, but
okay. Going back to the Philippines. In these people that died in the hospital and that. Was that left up to you to dispose of them? In other words, to dig the graves?
Oh, no.
No.
When a body would die, they had old regulars, kind of like a stretcher, only they were homemade out of.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd set them out on this stretcher outside the door, and then every morning they'd come by and pick them up.
Who would? The
well, the Japanese, burial detail.
The burial detail, which were prisoners.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And they'd...
How about the dog tags and things of that nature?
Oh, well,
who was responsible for those?
I always took them off and turned them into whoever come around to get them.
But it was did the Japanese take care of that at all? That was all left to just to the prisoners?
Yeah.
The Japanese made no effort to
no
keep
effort
track
of anything
of,
about that.
Okay.
We had a... Colonel Schwartz, Major Schwartz, who was then, he was the chief surgeon at number 2 hospital, and he went to this camp where we were at Command One, and he was a pretty decent sort of a guy. I mean, he kept track of the dog tags and whoever was sick and stuff like that, but...
Mm-hmm. Ken, as a kind of a summary now of your narrative, there are some points that that should be further expanded on. One of the things that I think we should talk about are the our prisoner activities. Could you give us a little narrative on that?
Well, most prisoner activities was something they could dream up themselves. I mean, there was a while we were in the Philippines, they had a top-notch band, musicians and put on floor shows and what have you to go with it. It was real top-notch entertainment. But when we went to Japan, there was nothing like that. All we had was, you know, play cards or checkers or stuff like that. But
could you talk a little bit about the Japanese? What did you call it? Flies for Cigarettes program?
Oh.
What was that?
Cigarettes were a premium. I mean, there just weren't any. So the Jap commandant said, well, make you earn your cigarettes. For every 100 flies you catch and bring in, I'll give you one cigarette. And also fleas. 100 fleas, he'd give you a cigarette too.
Well, how did you catch your flies?
Just catch them any way you can catch them.
And you got, for every 100, you get one
cigarette.
So
it'd take you all day to catch 100 fleas or 100 flies, and so you'd have a cigarette a day.
And is that about how it worked out, one cigarette a day?
That's about all. I never did do it. I never did catch them. It wasn't that important to me.
But a lot of prisoners actually did it.
Oh, yeah. And them straw mats that you slept on were just loaded with fleas. You could just lay back there and lay your arm out and you'd have a half a dozen on it before you could bat an eye. So they were easily caught.
Well, how could you keep them, though?
You put them in a little jar.
Oh, is that right?
A bottle or something.
Mm-hmm. And but, did the Japanese actually count them, or did they just gave you credit? Right?
I don't know if they did or not.
Well, you also mentioned that some of the food was so bad that you had to... modify the cooking.
Well,
could you?
Rice wasn't too good to begin with, and when they started giving us unpolished rice, it was just downright nasty. So the guys would steal castor oil, and they would. First, burn the castor oil in the skillet and it takes all the taste out of it. And then then they would fry the rice in that, which gave it a fairly palatable taste. But then the next day, well, they come around, you see everybody had who had been into the castor oil jug. They had a oily spot on the seat of their britches. And
well, this certainly was no help for the dysentery, was it?
Oh no.
Okay, and in the line of punishment, you commented before about the man with the broken leg and the Japanese were not willing to set it, and the